Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi everyone and welcome to this week's Snowcast. I'm DJ Walsh, hosting tonight, and I've gotten two men to fill the Eoghan Tabb shaped hole in my life. I've got Ollie Sharp, a veteran of the Snowcast. This is you must be near enough double figures at this stage, are you?
I love it, but it's good to be back.
Yeah, it's good to be back. You're actually sitting in the exact same spot you were the last time you were.
Oh, it's very close.
Yeah, cheek for cheek. Cheek. You're keeping well? Keeping well?
I'm doing very well. Work is busy.
People buy pints.
People buy pints. I generally serve them. Water is fairly green at the moment with the weather, but
Comfort pints.
Comfort pints. The stout is getting back.
And joining us on this not so glorious Thursday evening for the comfiest of comfort pints is Alan McGuire. Alan, second time on Snowcast, veteran of the Juvenilia podcast. Of course, you host that. A favourite of mine, one that I have many downloads of the back catalogue to get work my way through. My first listen tomorrow morning is going to be Hercules.
Oh yeah, very, very good one.
Yeah, I have high hopes for this now.
Yeah, Rena, who did that one, she had just like a full notepad full of notes and facts about Hercules. By the end, she was just like, "What else can I tell you about Hercules? I don't know." And she was just listing out facts about Danny DeVito and Christopher Walken.
And right. Stuff.
You know why not? It's a good time. I'm very happy to be back to drink a beer on a Thursday night.
If there's ever a way to justify drinking beer on a Thursday night, do a podcast where you have to drink beer on a Thursday night. It's our niche. Mm-hmm. It's our niche. There's opportunity in the market. Like, you know, we don't want to monopolize this market.
That could be one of your patron awards. It's like, we give you an excuse to get out of the house on a Thursday night. You can come be in the podcast silently if you pay us €5 a month.
I think that tier is like $50 a month. I think we're safely never going to have anyone that joins us because if anybody out there does want to pay us $50 a month, you're more than welcome to come along. The points will be on you. We're here in, I think every set, pretty much, this is our, I don't think, no, this is 26, 20. This is about our 46th episode. Right, that's a random guess, but near enough. And I reckon there's a solid 20-25 bit of Phil Grimes. And we're back at Phil Grimes again tonight. The reason we keep coming back is it's so good. Alan, you remember Phil Grimes in its older iteration.
Oh, yeah, so Grimes is one of my childhood pubs, which isn't really, I think, people have anymore, because it's not really frowned upon.
Yeah.
But it's one of the pubs our parents used to bring us to.
Are we the last generation of people who had childhood pubs?
I would say so. Definitely. We're definitely the last generation of childhood pool sharks, anyway.
Comfortably.
So we used to come here on Sundays after Mass. My father would come play cards with a group of men who used to play football for Bolton in the 80s. They would all just sit up in the corner there and play cards, and we would basically run up and down and play pool if there was nobody playing pool. And that was it. It was either there or Reginald's, when Reginald's was called Reginald's before it was the Reg, where they used to have like a live jazz band every Sunday morning.
Every Sunday
in
morning
in Waterford.
Fantastic. Yeah,
which is unusual. My parents hated it. They hated jazz, but it was their friend's father was a drummer, so they had to go and sit there and go, "We need this," every Sunday.
So hope your friend's father doesn't listen to this podcast.
He definitely does.
No, that's good, because just structurally, is the pub quite similar to what it was, what you remember?
It's exactly the same.
Yeah, I was really hoping you'd say
fantastic.
That.
There's more stuff on the walls, I would say that. But
it's 30 years of growth.
That's exactly. Yeah, actually, yeah, because it is probably 25 years since I was here regularly as a child.
since I've frequented this haunt regularly.
Yeah. I'm looking at that Waterford jersey and I recognise names off it and signatures of people who I know. So that'll tell you that's only about, that's Kennedy Pump from maybe 5 or 6 years ago. So that'll tell you.
I thought that said Alan Maguire for a minute.
You know what? The way that person's written Alan is exactly how I write Alan.
No way.
That is really freaky.
So this is like your Joey and Friends identical hand twin moment right now.
Yeah.
You're my Alan signature twin.
So I have a signature twin. Also, my eye twin is Claire Danes, I realise. Nobody believes me on that one, but she is. So that's
Claire, Claire, if you're listening.
Claire Danes, get in touch.
Put an eye picture up on Twitter, please. send eye pics. So we're here on Thursday night because we love to be here on a Thursday night, and as usual, Ollie, I'll come to you first. What are you drinking tonight?
I am on the Japanese Kirin Ashiban, seeing as though we're currently in Japan for the World Cup. I said I'd go with some sort of Japan theme. Its glass is pretty impressive, I must say. It does say beer at its purest, and I'd have to agree.
It's lovely, yeah.
It's pretty impressive. I would say it's maybe a bit too watery, but you know, other than that.
It's funny you say that, because two episodes ago we were here with my brother and Simon Cahoon. Three Life Doctor on Instagram. Good follow for healthy recipes. Not a good follow if you're having a hungover Thursday and you want a spice box. He'll show you up. But we were here and the Kirin Ichiban, I was drinking that. And I actually said the lightness of it on that night, because we, like, you know, my brother's drunk for the weekend, so we went out for dinner and had a few drinks at dinner and came here. And I said, like, the lightness of it was lovely for a session.
Yes, not for, we're going to have 3 or 4 drinks here and I'm going home afterwards.
Yeah,
I'm not looking for a castle.
Well, three and home.
Yeah, I still think it's a lovely point, but it's just, it's a bit more, too much like Coors Light.
Really?
Yeah. In its lightness.
Interesting.
In its lightness.
Oh, in the lightness, yeah.
It's
not nearly as gassy.
No, it's not. It's definitely not. But it's a nice beer, all the same.
It's not nearly as gassy.
I'd get it again.
Except the lovely pattern on the glasses.
Yeah. I was just going to say, it's a sign of a good glass and a good beer.
Sign of good everything. It's almost like a Japanese haiku. It's not at all. Like,
no.
I'm saying it is.
What it actually is a little bit like is, you know, that famous Japanese painting of the tidal wave of the tsunami. It's a bit like
you
that.
Just tilted a small bit.
Yeah,
yeah.
There
yeah.
you go.
You know,
perfect form.
Tilted a small bit.
Beautiful.
This is the point of the podcast where I'd say we'll put pictures up on Instagram and then don't take pictures and don't put.
Yeah,
up
I'm trying
Instagram.
To think of a 5-syllable, 7-syllable, 5-syllable thing to say about this glass, but I'm not going to get there.
That'd be very impressive.
I'll do it for when it comes out. We'll do a little
Brilliant.
Thing about it.
Right? Brilliant. That can be your little spiel.
That would be my contribution to the social media push for this episode.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Alan, what's your comfy Thursday pint?
So what I did was I panicked. And I came in, so if you know Grimes, it has two sections, and all the craft beers in one section, all the spirits are in the other, pretty much, kind of. And I came into the spirits section because I walked past you because you had your head down, you were in a baseball cap for some reason, indoors. It's fine, it's grand.
Starts thing.
Yeah, and I got Francis Conner, which is like retro craft beer.
Yeah.
Because I worked in Moffat's for a very long time, and I remember when there was a Francis Scanner, when it was just Erlinger and nothing else. Francis Scanner was exciting. So this is really a tribute to 22-year-old me.
I mean, you're basically reliving your whole life through this podcast right now. Childhood Alan eating skips.
Staring at a picture of Paul McGrath here. Remember when the time Paul McGrath stayed in the Terror Hotel when I was 6? The whole town stood outside the Terror Hotel waiting to get the window. That happened.
He didn't dangle any children like Michael
Jackson.
No, he
just waved. Yeah.
That was good of him.
I don't dangle any children.
I mean, I've never had people fawning at a hotel window hoping for a glimpse of me, like, but if I did, I'd probably do something stupid too.
It was like 2 months after the World Cup, 1990.
Okay. That's Pete McGrath there.
Yeah.
Speaking of the 1990 World Cup, I just bought an Italian 90 jersey online.
Really?
And it arrived, and it is spectacular in person.
I was born on the day of one of the matches.
That's ridiculous.
My cousin got married 2 weeks ago. We're at the wedding in London, and so she's Irish, but her husband is in London. So the best man bought him like Irish 94 jersey in small to make him fit in with the family, so he had to put on this very old aircon Ireland jersey during the best man speech. It's nice to watch.
Very good.
Yeah,
very
good. To see the old jerseys.
Me myself, I am drinking keeping in the team with the English guy marrying your cousin. I'm drinking an English beer, and it's from Tempest Brewing Company. It's the Citrus Itchy Pale Ale, Indian Pale Ale, and it is a 6.8%. Bit of kick in it, bit of juice.
Do you feel it?
No. That's the thing. It's really...
You were surprised when you found out.
Yeah, it's really soft. Yeah, because basically Tom said, I have a beer for you. Said, I have a Citra for you. Grand. I said, I'll have a pint of that, and said nothing to him, and I didn't even ask him where it was from when I was drinking it. And then I was like, I better find out what this is and look it up. And I looked up, and I was very shocked at the 6.8%, because it doesn't drink like a 6.8% at all. Very light, and very, very fruity. Very fruity. Which I'm a big fan of. I like a bit of punch. So that's what we're drinking. There's where we are. Alan is having flashbacks by the minute. And now, I just want to say... Ghost Our Dog, the last time you were on this podcast, Alan.
Yes.
It's become a phenomenon in our social media circles.
Has it?
Yeah, we've actually had to ask several people, would they rather be a ghost or dog? And I don't often get approached by people who listen to the podcast, because not too many people do. But I've been approached in a bar in recent times, and someone said, you're the guy from the Smokehouse, would you rather be a ghost or a dog? And he just kind of like, answered it in the podcast, but it was a lovely moment. It's become a little bit of a mini phenomenon for us. Yeah,
well, I'm glad to be on the ground floor of that.
Yeah, that was that was an eye opener. And geez, we went to some mad wild places.
We explored the space. Yeah.
We did. And that was really good. How are things with Juvenalia at the moment? All seems to be going really well.
Juvenalia is fine, yeah. We're recording two new episodes on Saturday. No, three new episodes on Saturday. We're going to Aladdin, which will be very exciting.
Oh,
very interested. And Cruel Intentions, which is one of my favourite films of all time. Very excited to talk about that.
Yeah. That was eye-opening for, like, as a like teenager growing up in rural Ireland. Seeing that film in Catholic rural Ireland was...
It's big city living.
I mean, we thought Sex in the City was racy, like, do you know?
No, Cruel Intentions is something else. Quite homophobic, if you're watching it, but...
Really?
It's 1999. Yeah,
so I haven't really watched it.
Is it 1999?
Yeah, it is, yeah. So it's 20 years old this year.
Is it a bit like, for me, who started It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, like, only last year? I was like, Jesus Christ, I would never get away with any of this now in the first couple
I feel
of series.
Like, though, that show has such comedic value to it.
Yeah.
It's such a comedy of errors all thrown into one episode.
I don't think their first series would take off if it was released today. It'd still be brilliant.
Well, the thing about It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is that they're terrible people. You're not supposed to advertise with them.
Exactly, yeah.
That's so what makes it so
anything they say, you know they actually mean the opposite.
Yeah.
So it's alright. And also, season one didn't have Danny DeVito either. So
no.
So it didn't really take off till he started waving his gun around. Which is my favourite bit of prop comedy. Any show ever.
And I mean, I love the way
he just get a gun suddenly. It's amazing.
And it just appeared in every episode.
Yeah.
Appeared in every single episode. So you've got Aladdin, Cruel Intentions, and...
And, we're doing a Patreon-only episode as well, which is Sega versus Nintendo in the 90s.
Oh, fuck. That'll be a heated debate,
It is, because I was Sega and Sarah was Nintendo. So, I'm Nintendo. I got, like, a Nintendo at Christmas. So, I'm finally Nintendo.
You're Nintendo now.
Now.
But child 90s Alan was Sega.
Definitely Sega.
Oh, yeah.
Because all the magazines were segregated. So you would just be reading pro-Sega propaganda all the time. You'd be like, well, the frame rate in the Aladdin game is much better, and the Mega Drive game on the Super Nintendo, obviously. And the graphics were done by, like, a whole different team, so, yeah.
But they missed a big trick. The Pokemon game came out in Super Nintendo and never came out in Sega.
That's true.
That was kind of the turning point, I feel.
More important thing for me as an 8-year-old was that Mortal Kombat on the Mega Drive had blood. Super Nintendo didn't.
Wow.
Wasn't allowed.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is very important. Yeah.
Yeah. That was.
I don't think I was born when either of these consoles were around. But look, there you go.
Wait, how old are you?
I'm only 21.
No, you weren't. Yeah, fuck that.
There's a shop in North Main Street in Cork that still sells Super Nintendos and Sega Mega Drives.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I walked past that one, so I was like, I can't. Like, I had to not go in. I knew I'd spend like all my money ever.
I went in, on what was probably the poorest week of my life. I won't be going in there anytime soon because I have to pay for a wedding.
But so the week after freshers, in the first or second year you
walked in. Around that time.
Yep.
Around that time. That's around the time it opened this.
Yeah.
And they still have them. It's amazing. It's like what CEX wants to be.
tell you now, I was after a wedding in London, we went to just for a wander around. It was in Harrow, which is not a very nice place to be, but it was fine.
Near Croydon.
Yeah, but they had a CEX and they had Moonwalker on the Mega Drive cartridge in a window, which is problematic gold dust, I would say. It's kind of like, it's a bit like buying a Nazi medal or something now.
Yeah.
But like 5 years ago, probably okay. But they had like proper old like Master System games and stuff in there. It was a time capsule.
I suppose at the same time too, with the size of the population in London, they're more likely to unearth those gems.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Those diamonds in the rough.
Yeah, but we have all the mini consoles now anyway.
Little Aladdin reference there for.
Yeah, nice.
I'm on fire tonight. I think I am. Really good.
Yeah.
Also, the last time we met before tonight was the last time either of us did stand-up comedy.
Mm.
And I really wanted to bring this up in podcast form because I believe that your litany of facts and post-modern realizations about the pre-Tato world astounded me.
Oh yeah, it was all true.
I know. I fully believed you. I mean, I'm not sure it was a stand-up comedy. Like, it was just funny incidental fact.
Oh no, it was a TED talk basically. Yeah. A TED talk about Tato. Yeah.
Which, I mean, everyone should have a TED talk about Tato.
Yeah, it's an important part of our cultural heritage. So.
Some would say the most.
Yeah, for anyone who doesn't know, Tato invented crisp flavors in 1954 and 57. One of those two. But there was no crisp flavors before that.
It was just fried spuds.
It was just a fried spud, and you could make a little packet of salt with it you could pour on. But Tato invented actually putting it on in advance and combining flavors. So they invented cheese. They invented cheese and onion.
In the world,
in the world, first place ever.
Western,
ever. Maybe the Persians had.
I was going to say, surely
2000 BC.
I feel like the Indians were fairly modern with their food.
Well, if you think of like poppadoms and all that kind of stuff, none of that is really flavored. You know,
that's so.
Also, an awful like all that stuff is just a carrier for your sauces and etc. Whereas like potatoes are a snack.
Yeah, and
they don't want rice.
The very first flavor they invented was cheese and onion. The second was salt and vinegar. That's the first two. That's like
I have a hot take on the cheese and onion.
What?
Because you said in your TED talk, how did they come up with cheese and onion?
Yeah.
So, a variety of concanon is running cheese through it. So it's cheese, potato, and onion.
Well, there you go. That's it.
Yeah. I don't know, is it? It might not be.
I would say there has to be. Yeah.
Maybe in Mead they were like slicing potatoes really finely and putting like little blocks of cheese and a little bit of onion on top of it for like. Maybe they were doing that back in the days of the High Kings of Tara.
Maybe.
They were on Newbridge with the skeleton, and they were just frying off, you know.
Yeah, they were just frying every kind of savoury thing together. They were like. Turnip and swede, that's the same thing, doesn't matter, it doesn't count. Yeah.
Turnip and parsley,
coriander and peas, that's probably okay. Try to get that at Spencer's now.
Coriander and peas would be kind of sort of fusion restaurant soup, I'd imagine.
Yes, it would. Yeah.
Not bad. Very good. So, there are only four real flavours of crisps, I believe.
Oh yeah, so they're the first four that Tato invented, which is basically at the Beatles of crisp flavors. It was cheese and onion, salt and vinegar, smoky bacon, and prawn cocktail. Those were the first four crisp flavors invented. And Tato makes all four.
There's a rule in our family home that you only eat smoky bacon at Christmas because you used to get the variety box.
Yeah.
And commercial smoky bacon could never be found in any shops near us.
It's rare. I feel like they alternate between prawn cocktail and smoky bacon to keep you on your toes.
Possibly, yeah.
Because Tato prawn cocktail is too strong to be an everyday crisp. It's like it's a weapon.
It's like Skips on steroids.
It's so strong.
It's definitely one of like the nicer treats you can have as crisp when you pick up a prawn cocktail.
Oh yeah.
Every month or two.
Yeah. In terms of like flavor, you're getting such value for money. Yeah.
I mean, I remember in my early college years, I was going out with a girl from Kerry, and I was down at her parents' house one weekend, and it was like July, and they had smoky bacon crisps in the cupboard, and I was genuinely culturally dumbfounded. Culturally dumbfounded at smoky bacon crisps. You also made some stark points about people who never enjoyed a tater sandwich.
Did I? I did. Yeah, because once you realise that nothing happened, there was no Chris Davis from 1957, it changes all of history, really.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like Michael Collins never had a crisp sandwich. It's quite upsetting. God,
this is terrible.
Yeah, you know? Mind blowing.
How could you say that?
Yeah.
I have a theory subsequent to your TED talk.
Yeah.
Had Franz Ferdinand had crisp sandwiches available to him, we would have avoided World War One.
He would have been ducking down, he would have been cleaning off some crumbs.
Yeah, he would have a crumbs docked, missed.
Gabriel or Princip would have missed, would have been fine. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Also, I imagine like Rasputin would not have gone half as extreme as he did if he had the capacity to just chill himself.
If you could have sublimated some of that extreme sexual energy into crisps instead.
Yeah,
I know, that's what I've done in my life. Because I've channeled off some of this raw sexual energy I have after eating crisps regularly. Yeah.
That explains why I eat so much crisps though.
Yeah. It's for everybody's benefit, really. Yeah.
I have something that I've been meaning to do with taters for a long, long time. With crisps in general. So, you know the spring onion and cheddar bistro potato crisps.
Yeah.
They're like So I've have this theory that the gourmet potato sandwich is some sourdough bread, some almond butter, and some of those. I reckon you've got a gourmet potato sandwich.
Okay.
This is like when those restaurants try to make fancy blahs. It's like, no, just put some ham in there.
Some red leaves.
I'm going to try it someday, and it's going to be terrible. And I'm going to take pictures of it beforehand to like wow everyone on social media. And those pictures never see the light of day.
It's hard to know which part of it will make it worse. Which bit will be the failure? Yeah. Will it be all three bits making each other fail more?
Maybe I need to do a Heston Blumenthal and try every single possible combination on a micro scale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then scale up.
Yeah, there's like six different versions of it. Yeah. Factorial and out. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Next week on the Snowcast.
I just realised I've never combined two types of crisps in a sandwich.
Have you?
A very purist.
I have.
Yeah. Yeah. I never have.
Have
you done the like non-potato, the baked maize crisps in a sandwich?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like
I was hoping you all
like a chickadee sandwich.
Chickadee sandwich, yeah.
Meanie's
chipsticks.
Chipsticks.
Chipsticks are cold in a sandwich, yeah.
Okay. No, Meanie's bar is like the pinnacle.
I've combined flavours actually, I have. Do you know the hula hoop where you get the salt vinegar ready salted and cheese and onion? I've done a big mix in a big massive sandwich before, but the key with those is you need to crush the hula hoop in the bag then you just put the sprinklings on the bread
because the original will neutralise it out. If you have barbecue beef in there, that wouldn't work.
Oh, that is
too strong.
Absolutely. It was a revelation. I only did it once. It was one of those where you know you're like 16 and you've got two friends staying over so you don't go to sleep and you stay up watching films with Elijah Wood and them that you didn't know existed because they weren't that good. It was like a 4 o'clock in the morning snack. We were each like, there was three of us and I was like, I'll have a salt and vinegar hula hoop sandwich, and one of the lads was like, give me a ready salted sandwich, and then the other lads were, I'll have a cheese and onion, and I was like, what if we combine them all? And as expected, the results were mind blowing. Absolutely mind-blowing.
We did something very similar and very similarly mind-blowing with a potato soup in college. So I made a potato soup, went out for the night, went out for a long night, came back, heated up the soup, and someone said we should add a tin of beans to this.
Wow.
And we said this is the, we just kept to potato soup, potato and leek soup, just tipped a tin of beans into it, heated it up, and we all just sat there at 4 in the morning going, this is so hearty. This is so hearty. It's hearty, it's very hearty.
It's like something like,
it wasn't nice. It definitely wasn't nice.
No,
yeah, couldn't. It's almost like something that an old wives' tale would tell you would cure like arthritis or something.
Yeah,
it's that kind of thing. Yeah. Like, you should have potato leek soup at 4 o'clock in the morning with beans ran through it.
Yeah, that'll cure any fracture you might have. Yeah.
I love it. How do we get potato leek soup from beans?
Yeah,
we started off with Mr. Potato in 1954. One of my favorite things to do is Google image the like historical representations of Mr. Potato on the bag. Because the Nordies have kind of gone retro.
They have a weird looking bag up there. It's a strange bag.
It reminds me of Tato Snacks inverted, the color scheme.
Yes, it is. Yeah,
and the Mr. Potato is almost like 1960s Tato Man. 1970s.
It's an old version, very retro.
Kind of, yeah.
It's like if new Mr. Potato had like a flashback to when he used to host a game show.
Yeah.
That's what he would look like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the biggest question I want to ask before we take a pint break that I want you both to contribute to heavily is, in the case of a United Ireland in the next couple of years, we're not going through the politics of whether it should or shouldn't happen or blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Most importantly, how will Tato packets look post the UI?
Okay, now apparently I've never tasted Northern Ireland Tato, but apparently they do taste different.
They do taste different.
They're different crisps.
I mean,
so
objectively, it's very hard to say which is nicer. Because like it's like 26 County Tato is like home for us because
free
that's what we grow.
Yeah,
yeah, free Tato. Yeah, yeah. I mean,
Sarah Stoughton again.
And what do they call the Nordy ones then?
The Tato.
I think it's Nordy Tato.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like that's almost like. I mean, if that doesn't represent partition, what does?
Yeah.
I do think.
Free Tato. I like that. I saw that.
It's not mine.
Yeah. I know. I saw it on Twitter and it escaped me.
Yeah.
But when you say it out loud, it's actually way better. I've only ever seen it in text.
I reckon the Sarah Stoughton Tato would be our preferred crisp, but I don't think Sarah Stoughton Tato will be able to go up to Northern Ireland and take over.
What I'd love to know is
two different bags.
If, and I don't know because it's very hard to judge these things because I've never had like done a blind taste test.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen a randomised controlled trial as to whether like Free Tato or Nordy Tatos are nicer. But I wonder if Free Tato, yeah, I said it right, did I? If Free Tato is nicer, would that go some way to bridging unionist opinion on a United Ireland? Can we like use our supposedly superior Tato as a political bargaining tool?
I would say they prefer their one no matter what.
Yeah, the hopeful answer is yes, but the realistic answer is most certainly not.
Yeah.
It's so unfortunate.
It's the same way you prefer like your mother's cooking than any other cooking.
Yeah.
No matter how objectively good or bad
well,
it is.
Actually, no, like, I don't. I'm from my grandmother's cooking, but.
Oh, well, there, yeah.
Yeah,
true,
but
yeah.
It's like you prefer a maternal influence in your life's cooking than
your
cooking.
My Irish is just deserting me. Your Hinton Féin is what you like. Yeah.
Hinton.
Right, interesting.
Hinton Féin. I think if it was on the table as a negotiating thing, where you're like, we'll share the NHS with you if you take our Tato, we're like, okay, we'll take the free healthcare.
Yeah, absolutely.
But
okay, yeah,
otherwise,
that might work.
I'm going to stick with our Tato.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. I mean, yeah, it's a small price to pay. Right, Michelle O'Neill, Arlene, if you're listening, get sit down over and a couple of bags of Tatos and just fucking sort it out.
Absolutely.
Lovely.
It's a deal breaker.
Right, lads, pints on me. And we're back in the room, and we may or may not, depending on my brother and Owen's productivity over the next couple of days, had an advertisement and or a special insert from Japan right there. Owen and Tommy, I really hope you're enjoying the Japanese beer. So this week we're going to do something slightly different. As usual, when Owen's away, I get a bit creative on the podcast, and sometimes it goes well, sometimes it doesn't. But Alan, you're one of the most prominent people in Irish Twitter. You sparked
social media presence.
Yeah, you sparked at least one debate in my time following you.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll go with that.
I mean, one national debate on Twitter is.
Yeah.
That was quite good. Like,
I've been around for a long time. You can't help but like just amass things after that. Yeah. But sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you've got a few Twitter tongues wagging in your time.
That's true. Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah, I've gotten blocked by some notable DJs in my time. Yeah.
I mean, look, if that's not deserving of a blue tick, I don't know what is.
You know what? Yeah, I decided a long time ago I wouldn't pursue a blue tick. I like it to be punk, keep it real.
Yeah.
That I won't want any club to have me as a member. I'm just you seem desperate to like want the blue tick. So I'm gonna not do that.
Do you think the blue tick removes the Twitter person from reality? Like all of a sudden you're not in touch with the working class Twitter.
You get a whole lot of extra options when you have blue tick. You can like set it so you can only see replies from other people with blue ticks.
How often does that
happen?
And I wanted to stay down with the normal folk, the normies.
So basically people not like, not against you if you have a blue tick, but people with blue ticks are Tories, in other words. They're Tories of Twitter.
They're Tories, or they worked for a media between 2012 and 2014. They were given one, whether they wanted it or not.
Yeah, essentially. Brilliant.
Yeah.
So I texted you during the week, because you were kind enough to agree to come on the show after spending 30 minutes talking about ghosts and dogs the last time, to pick out a good tweet and a bad tweet of the week,
Yeah.
Where did you go?
So, I'm going to start with the good one or the bad one?
I'll let you choose, because I don't know what you picked.
Alright, so we'll start with the bad one, get it out of the way.
Yeah.
So you said
the elephant in all of the
rooms. And then I was keeping a lookout, and then something happened that just caused a flood of awful tweets by the worst people in the world. So this is just a category of tweet rather than an actual tweet. We'll probably mention a couple of specific ones. But basically, any like anti-Greta Thunberg tweet is the worst tweet of the week. if you're raising anti a 60-year-old girl going, please don't boil the planet while I'm still alive, it's a bad tweet. You need to just redraft it and go, what am I actually trying to do here? What am I saying? You know, like that woman who saw her on a train with a load of like recycled stuff, reusable bottles. Was like,
I saw that tweet.
She, what? How dare she be on a train and be opposed to climate change? What?
I mean, last week on the Snowcast, we talked about like really alternative and mad modes of transport, because there was a few hot air balloons around.
Yeah,
which was cool, really cool.
Yeah,
but barring like, I don't know, some mad fucking jetpack that runs off steam or something, I believe trains are the most eco-friendly method of transport, regular method of transport besides walking and cycling.
Like trams, trains, anything you can put on an electric line pretty much, because that would be powered by solar power.
That's that debunked. And like, she had reusable water bottles. She had recyclable containers.
Vegan salads.
Yeah.
I mean,
like, look, by the looks of it, like, she was eating a fairly like non-existent. It was a very simple lunch, and you know, one had to go with her, and then everyone in the comments just absolutely tore to shreds.
I feel like if you're coming from Greta Thunberg, you must have some kind of fetish for getting just bodied by everybody in the world.
That lady got bodied.
She really did.
She got bodied. That's the only way to put it. She got destroyed.
There's almost so many stupid tweets in response to Greta Thunberg with outrage that they nearly have their own little subcategories. And not my favourite subcategory, because that's the wrong word to use, but the subcategory I find most ridiculous is like, why should we listen to a 16-year-old? Like, how is she an expert? And when literally all she is saying is, stop ignoring the experts. So her literal message is, listen to the scientists and the experts. They have been telling us this for 30 years.
These people clearly aren't listening to experts.
Why would I listen to a 16-year-old girl? Why don't you put someone, some sort of, I don't know, what's the word, expert in front of me?
Some kind of climate change scientist?
Any tweet I saw, I clicked on, they were UKIP supporters. Often it's the case that they were UKIP supporters. There's just no need for that.
It's the classic kind of like, people who oppose gay marriage, people who oppose civil liberties and civil rights, people who oppose like women having the vote, people who opposed the abolition of slavery, and people who oppose Greta Thunberg's message. If they were all put in various Venn diagrams, it would be a perfect circle.
It's so weird how all the anti-choice Twitter accounts are all anti-immigrant now. Ironically, migrated over into being anti-immigrant from anti-choice.
I mean,
anti-choice changed their name.
If my mind was really sharp, I'd create a quick anagram of what they are, and it would spell Iona. Am I allowed to say that in the podcast? I'm saying it anyway. I don't give a fuck.
He was saying, why are people listening to her?
Let's be honest. So I thought that was a really good choice. It was the obvious choice. But at the same time, it needed to be said. The thing I find most baffling is the fact that so many people find it very difficult to believe that a 16-year-old can actually think for themselves and critically analyse things for themselves. I was like,
her, to be fair though, her articulation is fantastic when she's speaking. Her, like, her ability to speak,
even in her second language.
Absolutely. And like, she has Asperger's, like, it mustn't be easy for her to get up on a stage and do it. And she does it very confidently, very easily for what, like, what we see. It seems quite, she's eloquent when she speaks. And it's so lovely to see, like, she's so passionate about the situation as well. Obviously, it's inspiring.
She addressed the Asperger's in a kind of lengthy statement during the week that was, like, absolutely brilliant, and her take on it was fantastic. And that she, I think she said she finds it difficult to socialise face to face, so she kind of got, that's why she got involved in campaigns in the first place. And her outlook on even, you know, being somebody living with Asperger's, like, she doesn't see it as a burden. She actually sees it as something that's given her the drive and passion to pursue this. Like, she is an absolute credit. And
it's a feather in her cap.
Yeah, well, that's the way she sees it. Like, who are we to?
Yes, it's like admirable.
Like, all these movements, like anti-slavery and Civil Rights Act, like suffragettes, it's all just things like one person to go, someone needs to do something about this, and then the next thing to go, I could be the person to do something about this, so I'm going to do it. And she did it. And she's just following through. And it takes an easy person.
She just took the bull by the horns.
Didn't it all start by?
She started to walk the walk.
It all started by her writing an essay, I think, to the Swedish government and giving an award or something along them lines.
Yeah.
And from there, it's kind of sparked this massive movement. She's become a global phenomenon. And at the end of the day, like, people supported the Nazis. You know, I'm not saying that people support Greta. I better clarify that point.
Yeah, jump back a couple of steps there.
People thought the Nazis were right, and that the people who were suffering at their hands were wrong. You know,
it is all a point of view, though. The same. I know that's terrible. I'm not saying
it's fact what she's saying. You know, like, absolutely, like polar ice caps are melting. Like, did you see the infographic that was going around Twitter today? That was Ireland after the sea rises 3 foot.
Was that 3 foot? The actual picture didn't have a
I just presumed that was what it was.
Yeah, it didn't actually say how many feet it was.
Oh, it's Meath for Sam or something.
One from us gone.
Yeah.
We're also called a minor city in that, which I'll take because they're good close to town.
Waterford is literally water.
Yeah.
It lost its ford.
I'm pretty sure, like, up in Ferry, I can see Rue will be okay.
Yeah. I'm so glad I moved there.
I'll
be in trouble.
You'll be in trouble,
I will be in trouble.
I'm fairly certain, like City Square is probably 3 feet above the river, surely, isn't it?
But the issue, boating will become very popular. Like, rowing, like, I'm going to focus all my gym time in a rowing machine now, and I'm just going to be really good at rowing because I need to be.
Invest in it.
But boats are going to become, like, more expensive than platinum.
Get them now. If there's 3 feet,
don't have the money now. You're trying to pay for a wedding. So that was you're right. There's not much more you can say about it. Only, like, don't be a dick. And even if you do disagree with her, which you're entitled to do,
absolutely.
Don't be a dick to a 16-year-old girl. Like, just say, "Oh, I disagree with her." You don't have to turn around and say she's a whatever. Like, just
and say horrible things, or
say something constructive and argue the point in a constructive manner. Don't just be a dick.
Don't include paedophile ring leaders in the same tweet.
Yeah.
On it not being real, I was in Alaska last month. We were up in Skagway, which is about, you know, Alaska kind of has, teacher murder. So, you know, Alaska has a little bit of the side of Canada and then a big chunk.
Yeah.
The Skagway is like the last bit on the leg. And it was like 30 degrees there. They were like, this is the hottest summer we've ever had. They were like, that glacier used to be much further down. Like, we are living this. This is fucked. We can see that it's fucked. They're saying it's the tourists.
It's terrible.
Yeah. It's not just the glaciers then, it's the acidification of the ocean and all that. Like, there's so much more going on. Look.
It's just scary. It's actually quite scary that we're living in a time where, in 20 years,
I love the way, like, people say Al Gore said this 15 years ago and it hasn't materialised. Like, the science was less perfect then than it is now. Like, it's still imperfect, but it's a lot fucking more accurate. Like,
and he's still foresaw, but obviously he had the science behind him 15 years ago.
To bring it back to the Sunkast, when I was there, went to the Skagway Brewing Company, had the Skagway Blonde Ale. Very nice.
Shout out to Skagway. If you want to say,
they actually, that their bar is completely carbon neutral. They use, like, the heat from the kitchen to heat the bar, and the cooling from the bar to cool something else. And they use, like, biomass from somewhere else in the town to actually use their drive their motors and stuff, and the whole thing, this whole brewery is carbon neutral up in Alaska. So if they're doing it up there, yeah, we're in a place, I mean, you can only reach by boat.
I know, and yeah. I was going to say, like, Skagway send us some beers, but it probably would not be carbon neutral to send beers from Skagway to Alaska to Waterford. But yeah, if we ever make it there, we'll
check it
out.
Yep.
But shout out to them guys, because it sounds class.
I don't know if you saw it, but Trump tweeted something extremely condescending about Greta Thunberg during the week.
And she owned him.
And she completely owned him. Put in her bio everything. I must say, I was very pleased when you saw it.
Did you see it? Did you see the parody video about the Greta Thunberg?
Looks like Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
No, the helpline.
No.
The Greta Thunberg helpline. And it was like just this skit.
Oh, I saw her tweet. I didn't actually watch the video. Yeah.
So the video was like just these, like, people of a very similar demographic getting angry, let's just put it that way, getting angry at Greta Thunberg and ringing this helpline, and just the helpline kind of steering them in the right direction, which is quite funny. And she like just retweeted it saying, you know, don't worry, there's help available or something along those lines. It was very funny.
You know the way the Simpsons have seemingly predicted certain things have happened tens of years, and you see, like, you know, screaming shots of Simpsons moments where they're like, oh, they just predict things. But there was one recently where they had Trump and then Lisa in the background looking at her, and it's the exact same kind of framing as when Trump walked on the scene and Greta Thunberg is like behind her, and she's scowling at him, and then the next thing is like she's up in the pulpit and she's speaking, and then Lisa's doing the same thing, and then the next one's like a newspaper article, it's like local girl changes world. It's pretty cool.
Ah, look, maybe we should be watching reruns of The Simpsons trying to predict the future.
I think so.
Oh, yeah. Well, they predicted the first 9 years anyway.
They predicted the Cubs winning the World Series 2 years ago.
Yeah. And they launched their own political party this week as well.
The ISF. Yeah. Another fraction of the left wing.
I'm probably going to join it. Everything they're saying, I'm like, yep, agree with that. That's good. Yeah.
I mean, to be honest with you, like, the only thing that turned me off joining it is I want to put a meme up on their Facebook page that had 590 likes in about 8 or 9 minutes, which I like, literally my phone was on fire. And they took it down because they said it hadn't enough Simpsons reference. I was heartbroken. It was, to be fair, I can see why they did it, but at the same time, dude, take it down is harsh. And then, but no, taking it down, fair enough, but they banned me for like a week from commenting or posting. And now every time I try and post, a moderator has to approve it, which is like, seems a bit over the top. So it was when the Finnish guy did the Ireland and the Irish flag Union Jack, and was like, do the Duff beer meme, where it's all going into the one place. It was like Duff, Diet Duff, whatever. And he'd like a, you know, an outsider trying to understand when you're all the same or something along them lines was his. And I had, do you know the YouTube video that went viral a couple of years ago, Fintan? Fuck's sake, Fintan!
Yeah.
The dog.
Oh, Fintan, yeah.
Fintan. So that's where I'm going wrong. So I had basically got a screenshot of that clip, and I had put a Finnish flag on the dog and the ISF page logo on the man, and had said, for fuck's sake, Finn Tan.
It's a very high concept.
Yeah.
You know, there's several areas to this meme.
I mean, yeah, maybe it wasn't it.
I've never gotten more than like 200 likes on ISF though.
Yeah, so. I had one.
Thanks, lads.
Thanks, Tom. I had a 500 or before as well. It was this episode with Ed Sheeran came out. Now, obviously, I don't watch Leonard Simpson's episodes because they're shite.
Yeah.
But I just kind of saw an article about it, so I clicked into it. There was this like picture there that I stole, and then just put up like, it was Lisa and Ed Sheeran playing music, or like a childhood version of Ed Sheeran that was going to shift like 10-year-old Lisa. And
I remember that episode. That's really
weird. Yeah, they were playing music together in a garage or something, and it was like she played the fiddle in an Irish band, but she fell in love with an English tan, which was very on point for ISF.
Yeah,
so that went well. That was before it. Like, at the moment, was it?
Yeah.
At the moment, everybody gets, like, you put up Anton now and you're getting 2,000 likes because this got so big. That was back when, like, 1,000 was, like, amazing. It's gotten so
I feel like I put us up very recently when we got 200 likes, but it's fine. I'm a niche poster.
I can't even get my post now approved by the moderators. I had a really good blind boy one lately, but it never made it to the page.
Yeah, see, some of the like original moderators follow me on Twitter, but now none of the new ones do, so I'm like, privileges are gone.
Anyways,
good tweet.
I'm looking forward to this.
This one is about podcasts. So when podcasts,
is this a good tweet?
It's a good tweet. Okay. And it is by, it's by Video Dante.
Very good.
Yeah. It says, when podcasts have guests on who I don't know, it's like, who invited these people to my personal parasocial friendship? You think I made a parasocial relationship energy or something? Now, I realize from your face that neither of you know what parasocial relationships are. Yeah, definitely not.
Hold on.
See, because I work in the scientific world.
Yeah.
And I, simply because so much of my scientific world has the pseudo prefix.
Yeah.
Whenever para prefix is used, my brain goes straight to like pseudo. So I go pseudo social.
But that's exactly what it is.
I get you.
A parasocial relationship is a one sided relationship you form with like a media figure.
Yes.
Something you consume that they don't know you've consumed. So you form it with like people on TV or YouTubers or
is it
podcast
a
hosts.
Twitter stan? Like someone that is like so.
You're talking young person talking.
I am talking young person talking. It's like when say like. As in, for instance, I see it very regularly on Twitter from YouTubers I follow. They reply to Twitter stans,
yeah.
And they're like, their names are like, YouTubers' names in different weird names.
I would
and
say,
they, like,
yeah.
Love that. Is it something like that?
Is it like the way...
Stans have this expectation of reciprocity.
Yeah.
Stans just are obsessed and love it.
Okay.
Whereas, for a parasocial relationship, you kind of feel like...
So
is
it,
friends?
So it's like the way head, me and Daniel Ricciardo, the Formula One driver, are best friends.
Yeah.
But like, I'm never going to meet him, and he doesn't know exists.
Right. Okay.
So that's what it is.
Say like a podcast you listen to a lot. You're like, you feel like you know the person really well.
Yeah.
But if you met them, you'd be like, you would scare them by knowing what you know about them.
Right.
You know, like me with like the McElroy brothers. I'm like, I would get on so well with Griffin.
Yeah.
We would just be best friends. You know,
it's like when I met Finn Dwyer. And
yeah,
I was like,
exactly.
I was like, oh my god, I love you. Can I buy you a pint?
So if you listen to a podcast, right, and it's all the guests tend to be people you kind of know already from like Twitter or real life, and then they have on someone random, like for instance, the first. I was on here and everybody who knows he was like, who's this? I don't want to make a new friend. DJ and Owen are my friends.
Yeah.
What was very funny was the first time you were on our podcast, someone listened to it and in the week after I was having lunch and they came up to me and said, I really like the podcast. By the way, the guy you were on, is this him? And then they just showed me your Twitter profile and I was like, yeah, that's him.
Yeah.
So they had a parasocial relationship with both of us and then met me in real life.
Yeah. See, what I do is if I have a parasocial relationship with someone from Twitter, I just invite them on the podcast to make it into a real friendship instead.
Yeah.
And just cut out the
kind of like what I did with you.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It works. It's really good. Yeah.
Yeah. And then we do stand up together and have pints once every 4 months.
Yeah. I can't believe it was April when I was here last. It feels like.
Was it April?
Yeah.
Oh man.
It's weird. Okay, I have another
tweet. I said
tweet.
4 months.
Good,
that was like
good tweet,
6 months.
I'd like to.
That's a really good tweet.
But
yeah.
I have a one that I saw just before it came out, which is.
Will you send me a link to that tweet so I can, first of all, like it and then share it?
Yeah. Now this one's another topical one. One of the two topical ones, but someone said, and I can't remember who. When Trump gets impeached, he should be made wash cars in the White House like Biff at the end of Back to the Future.
I saw that one just there. That's amazing.
It's brilliant. I don't laugh out loud much at stuff anymore. I did a good old hearty chuckle to that.
Yeah, you can't beat a good hearty chuckle.
I saw that. That was really impressive.
Yeah, it's a very good pull. Yeah,
the ingenuity of some tweeters it's just fantastic.
Yeah.
It's mad. Sometimes I'll tweet something and I'm like, this is gold. It's going to get like 21,000 likes.
You said that to me before.
Yeah, and then like, it doesn't, like, and I like, I'll be like, Ollie, look, this tweet was really good. Nobody liked
four
it.
Likes.
And you laugh at it. You laugh at it. And then you're like, not like it yourself.
This is very true.
And then I'll tweet something that is just like an anger impulse tweet or like an impulse of joy tweet, and then you get like 8 retweets and 50 likes, which is like what you get just normally.
Well, exactly. Like, the things you actually like put a bit of time into never ever do.
Yeah.
It's like my biggest bit ever was a crow tweet that I do in stand up now, and I got like 150,000 likes and like whatever. But I literally saw two crows went over toothbrush on my lunch hour and went on a tweet about that, then added a punchline to it, and straight away things started. I was like, oh shit. And by the time I got home from work 2 hours later, it was like 5,000 retweets. I was like, I'm gonna have to mute this.
Yeah.
But anyway, I was sitting at work the next day. and like J.K. Rowling had retweeted it or something. So my phone was just going.
So can I ask you, right?
Yeah.
You like Harry Potter?
I do.
Right.
Yeah.
So J.K. Rowling retweets that. Does childhood you who loved Harry Potter like jump out, or does adult you who thinks she's a Tory? I don't really think she clearly is, but were you conflicted?
She's in bad company.
She's in bad company.
Yes, I was.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't start reading Harry Potter until I was in 6 years.
Okay.
I'm old, but so I was like, tempered a bit.
That's...
Yeah, like the first four books were up in a minute.
Yeah, because I was Harry's age as they came out.
Yeah,
I mean,
I went to the midnight launch of the last one, but we left a gig.
Yeah,
and went to midnight launch and so that's we went back for the encore. It's
very
good. 24. So it's around, yeah.
When you say it's so good, right? It was. From like the fourth book onwards, but the disappointment every year of not getting an owl with an invitation to it.
True. Okay.
Understandable. 11-year-old me on my 12th birthday was like, it'll come this year. I was fully convinced, which is why I have a small social circle now.
What they should really do is like make you read like a Jonathan Franzen novel when you're 11. Go, now this is what life will actually be like, but now go back to your little fantasy novels where you can imagine things might be better, but in reality it will be you having sad sex with it as a professor at some point. Don't worry about it.
I mean, it's a bit like the way I really liked my English teacher for Junior Cert, and he left after Junior Cert, but I really appreciate the fact that he made us do James Joyce for the Junior Cert. Now, it wasn't Ulysses, it was The Portrait of an Artist as a Young Man. And when you're like 14 having to read that chapter that is a pre-sermon about how we're all going to hell and how everything is sending you to hell.
Yeah.
Fucking reality check. And then you grow up and realise it's all bollocks. But
we have to Kill a Mockingbird for Junior Cert, which I think is a good book for 14-year-olds.
For Junior Cert?
No, Junior Cert. Oh, yeah. We had Reading in the Dark for Junior Cert, which is about the Troubles and fairies.
Yeah.
Which again, weird one.
Weird.
Not a lot of lessons to take.
I don't think what we did for Leaving Cert. I can't really remember.
We did Hamlet as well.
So I went to Gael school, yeah. So we didn't put too much emphasis on English.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We did Antigone.
Antigone. Oh, yeah.
That was actually pretty cool. I really enjoyed that one. We went to the Theatre Royal and we were having a show. It was actually, like, it was pretty interesting, to be fair. I mean,
did we do Animal Farm? I think we did Animal Farm. It's a bit.
Animal Farm is so. It's a bit strange.
We did transition year, and our teacher was. I had the same teacher from second year through to sixth year. We did transition year.
That's great.
And transition year, he was like, basically, you think he just made us read what he wanted us to read instead of what was on the course. So he'd like Animal Farm, 1984, and Of Mice and Men. I think.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. So that was very
intense stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In transition year in English class, I had to play. We did a school play that never made it to the stage. What do you call it, stage? And it was the first year the school planned on doing a play, and they had no experience of doing a play, so it just never made it. But I got cast as the gay priest, the gay uncle who was a priest. So it wouldn't be well known because the year before there was a competition, nationwide competition for transitioning students to write a play, and this had won that competition, so we were going to do it. And it was actually a really good play.
Yeah.
To be fair, the guy has some talent. I wish I could remember his name, because maybe he writes plays now and he's really famous, and I could be like, oh, I played your gay priest uncle. But ironically, then Finn asked me to do a voiceover for one of his Irish history podcasts, and I played a priest in that as well. So I'm kind of typecast now.
I would say you're a priestly vibe.
Yeah, I don't like anyone.
He's not very priestly.
You're showing a lot of chest hair for
priests. maybe I'm showing the exact amount of chest hair priests show.
Maybe that's it. Priest in a robe.
Yeah. So we've mentioned that Owen's away at the Rugby World Cup in Japan. I don't really watch that much rugby. Alan, what's your rugby knowledge base?
Not a clue.
Do you know?
I got Italy in the pool at work. Apparently that's bad.
Who'd you have?
Italy?
They could have been today, but generally not so good.
I'll tune in again at the very end.
I believe they're the sixth best team in Europe.
Well, there you go.
That would be it.
You watch a bit.
I'd be interested.
Rugby fan.
To be fair, I would be a rugby fan.
So, in a non-rugby related question, then, what's your favourite thing about Japan?
My my favourite thing about Japan, I recently discovered Pocky, which I'm now in love with.
What's is, that?
Pocky. So over here it's sold as...
Walk away, chap.
Well, how are you?
How are you getting on?
Not too bad, sure.
Ah, sure. Hanging in there.
So Pocky over here is, it's called a cava sometimes. It's a little stick of like a very small bread stick dipped in chocolate.
Oh.
And in Japan, and obviously they import it into, they have it in the comic book shop here.
I had them in Shanghai when I was in the T1.
Yeah.
And they were pretty good.
It's just a very, very tasty little snack. It's like, it's simply like a very long matcha covered in chocolate.
Really good.
But they come in like every flavor. They have matcha green tea ones. Delicious, really good. So I love that about Japan. It's my new
thing. My favorite thing with Japan has to be how they treat and respect the food they make in restaurants. I think it's absolutely unbelievable. I don't know if you've seen it before, Chef's Table on Netflix, and they have a Japanese segment and they go through how they cut and create bluefin tuna. If you don't know, is like one of the most expensive fish in the world, and they create these like incredible dishes from this really expensive fish, and it's actually like it's so cool, like, you know, people, and it's just Japanese cuisine and how they treat their food is just unbelievable. It's fantastic.
Oh, actually, when I was in New York last year, we went to Momofuku and had a pork bun from Momofuku, which is the best thing I've ever tasted in my life. It's just,
what was it?
A pork bun from Momofuku, which is a very, very soft, doughy thing with a little, like pulled rib in it, covered in just the best, like, teriyaki soy kind of sauce, and it's just the best thing.
Yeah. You bite in, you're like, wow.
Yeah, it's like, I remember this.
My favourite thing about Japan is, I'll tell you one quick funny joke about Japan. When I went to Copenhagen with Niamh, and it was our first holiday away together, first day in a foreign country with someone, we went to restaurants, and Niamh's weak point would be maths. And so 7 Danish kroner is 1 euro. Niamh ordered a Kobe beef burger, not realizing how much it cost, and I had said, I'll pay for this. So she ordered a Kobe beef burger on her first ever day in a foreign country together, on her first holiday together. I was a bit like,
you're getting fairly fucking flush with the
there. Kobe beef burger. When I told her what price it was after she had ordered and it came out, I put it this way, she like, in fairness, she offered to pay for it, and I stuck to my word and I did pay for it.
Yeah, you suck it up.
She's probably pity marrying me because of it.
She owes you,
still owes you to this day.
But that was good. Kobe beef, obviously, being Japanese delicatessen.
That's the thing with like Copenhagen, like Canada, where their price is worth a lot more than the euro. Like, I assume this will work out. I don't even try pay, like, figure out, it's like, fine. And then look, then after you look at your phone, back in your bank account, you're like, it's okay.
I know that after the Kobe beef incident of Copenhagen 2016, ever since, she just lets me do all the arithmetic, which is probably a wise choice for our finances, our joint finances.
Love you, Niamh, but maybe leave.
Is Pokemon an answer?
Yes.
Pokemon's my favourite thing in Japan.
Anime is an answer.
I kind of never got into anime. I can see like why people think it's class because I was obsessed with
it. Yeah, I have a list of recommendations from my friend Dean on what I should watch, but I just haven't.
Yeah.
The first one I watched, it turned out to be anti-Semitic, and the whole thing was not a movie about Jews or bad. I was like, right.
Oh, Jesus.
Bad.
Yeah, do not keep watching this.
Does Yu-Gi-Oh! Fall into the category of...
Well, that's Japanese, yeah.
It's all watched a lot.
What about Dragon Ball Z?
Yeah.
But is it anime?
Oh, yeah.
I think so.
Because my brother Ian loves Dragon Ball Z. No, Pokemon would be mine, because it, like, literally defined 4 years of my childhood.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. It's not like an Americanized
No, I don't think so. I think Naruto, Dragon Ball Z,
Avatar.
Goku. He's like his own little separate thing, I think.
Yeah, he's just one of those things you know what probably is. You know, you
haven't yeah, absolutely. Look, I've never watched. I've never watched Dragon. Well, I've seen obviously bits and bobs, but
Yu-Gi-Oh. He was a Super Saiyan.
Yu-Gi-Oh was the fucking the shit back in the day. Like from second class to probably
I think I was
class.
Yeah.
That was when Yu-Gi-Oh was proper. It's prime.
So I think yeah. Yu-Gi-Oh kind of followed Pokemon, and I was Pokemon heavy.
I was a little bit of Pokemon and way too old for Yu-Gi-Oh.
Yeah.
But my college roommates were obsessed with card game. They would like play the Yu-Gi-Oh card game against each other, and they would like have screaming matches at each other about interpretations of the rules.
Oh my god,
they took it so seriously.
Yeah.
I remember like fourth class children were playing against each other, and they used to have these like, so like I've my watch on, right, and they have like a watch band here and a watch band here, and they had this like deck across their arm, and they'd have the five cards or six cards you needed to play Yu-Gi-Oh.
Yeah.
And some guy would be like, I draw the obelisk, and throw it down, and everyone's like, oh shit, like your man just pulled out obelisk, oh fuck, like this has got really serious. And then, you know, he'd be here and he'd be like, yeah, and he'd like, and then the other guy would be like, shit, like, what am I going to do? And then there was this one being, right, and he had five cards, and it was his head, his torso, his two legs, and then like his spirit. And when you put that together, that whole thing,
it's just one Yu-Gi-Oh,
it defeated everyone.
It's a Royal Flush pretty much.
I don't remember what it was, but I remember whatever what it was anyway, it just defeated everyone. And then one day, like, some guy had like four in a row, and he was like, if you pull out this card, it was just like going to be, and he was losing, and he was waiting, and he had like, your man was about to kill me, like the Dark Knight pulled out and all this kind of carry on, and your man just whipped out like the last piece of the arm and threw it down, and everyone was like, this is unbelievable, this man has just come from the dead and beaten this other kid in fourth class. And it was like one of the most spectacular, and
it's kind of like
amazing.
It was
just so good. Like,
it's kind of like when Ash Ketchum revived Charmander.
Like, totally. Like,
or have you ever seen that video of 100 Street Fighter 2 World Championships, where there's two, like, it's these two guys who are like really famous for being amazing at Street Fighter, and it's the final, the last match of the final, and there's one who was not particularly well liked and one was very well liked. The guy who was well liked was the very last bit of energy. The guy who wasn't very well liked unleashed a 23 hit combo, and the good guy blocked every single one of them.
Oh my god,
like 23 perfect blocks, and knocked out the other guy and won the championship. And the place is fucking
there's no need for that.
It is unbelievable. It's like, it was like, I've never seen anything like it.
I feel incomplete because I've heard about it and I haven't seen it.
I'm really into watching competitive video games. I started watching Tetris World Championships.
Oh yeah,
it's like inhuman how good these people are.
It's crazy. It's actually scary.
I have a brother who my brother Alan, good name, doesn't, well, his signature actually isn't a million miles away from you and your signature twin.
See, it's not a very interesting name. We have to spice it up where we can.
Yeah.
Make very high A for the album.
You put the emphasis on the A. He is like obsessed with Ninja for Fortnite, and just like he would be sitting at home just watching Ninja on his phone.
Yeah,
we could be having a conversation. He's just gone. Very quickly to end the show, last question. Because Owen's gone to the Rugby World Cup in Japan without being a rugby fiend, so he's basically used this as an excuse to go to Japan. What's the best excuse you ever used to travel anywhere, Alan?
Best excuse? Oh, so when I was doing my master's, my wife, my girlfriend, was doing her fourth year exams, and she was kind of worried about one exam. So I decided that I would get the bus from Cork to Limerick. I was in Cork, she was in Limerick. Got up, got the 8 a.m. bus to Limerick. So just leave her after her exam. So I went and had coffee, and then she had another exam, so that goes to Cork. So just, that was my
so that's why she pity married you.
Yeah.
That's actually a lovely story.
Take off my bus.
Brilliant, lovely. That's not bad. That's not bad. I thought of this question during the week and I never thought of my own answer, so I must think, well, Ollie, and think, what's the best excuse you ever had?
So I saw J. Cole in Amsterdam in my first year of college, but we had our tickets for Dublin, sold them, bought tickets for Amsterdam, and the real reason I went over was my mate was in college over there, and I went over, and hopefully mum's not listening, but I smoked a load of joints at coffee shops over there, and I was really high listening on the the concert. It was one of the best concerts I think I've ever seen. But
it's funny.
I really went over to get Ollie. It was really good fun.
I'm friends with both Ollie and his mother.
It's terrible. An awkward position. Yeah. I'm in a terrible position. He's okay.
I'm not going to tell his mother about all the joints he smoked that thing, but.
She knew.
Right. Best excuse I've ever had to travel anywhere.
Irrelevant.
That was a good excuse.
It was a very good excuse.
Yeah, travel. I got engaged in Rome. Nice. I've been to Rome several times. I've never been to Rome, so I knew.
It was the best place. I think that was like.
Yeah, but it was low key and awkward. I told a story in the podcast before, but. Basically, Niamh doesn't like public attention, so I had to like discreetly get engaged to her, but in Rome, in a really romantic location. And there happened to be like about 400 Asian tourists, so I was like, sorry, I hit the microphone. I was like, little ring box open, trying not to show anyone else, and kind of didn't show her. It was also. I'm a bit of a Formula One geek. Love Formula One. I love this. I love the physics behind it as well as driving. And I love the fact that talking about like being eco-friendly and stuff. While it is absolutely not eco-friendly, they have moved to V6 from V12 engines back in the day to like V6 turbo hybrid engines now. So a lot of driving is done by electricity. So they are.
It's very interesting.
The next big step. Yeah, the next big step for them is trying to reduce the carbon footprint traveling from city to city, as opposed to the actual cars themselves, because the cars themselves are a lot more efficient now than they were.
Yeah, but to be fair, while they're in Europe, their carbon footprint is not bad, because
I know they're using loads of massive trucks and they're constantly running over weekends and stuff, so it's not great. I won't even defend it. However, to go see the Belgian Grand Prix, which is like one of the really famous older ones and one of the most frequently used ones, it's set in the Ardennes Forest. And it's like the track is actually in the Ardennes and goes through the forest and everything, and it is just the most beautiful, amazing setting for anything. And I might say like a motor race, and like the village spa is tiny, and there's like a couple of 100,000 people to stand on it for 1 week in the year, which is pretty cool. And you just camp out, and you need to get like a train from the edge to Francorchamps and then like a 2-hour bus into the forest to get there. It's just.
Have you been?
I've been to the Belgian Grand Prix twice. It's amazing. It's amazing. If you had no interest in Formula One whatsoever, and went just for the weekend for camping, drinking beers, and ignore the cars but the crack and just the setting, like you could never have had any interest in motorsport or a car or anything in your life, and it would be a brilliant weekend.
Yeah. Isn't it nice when you do like a once in a lifetime trip and you do it and you're like, oh, I'd actually do that again.
The thing is as well, like say there's now like street circuits where like in Mexico City, Singapore, Baku, they do like Grand Prix in the city, and like part of the city's closed down to build a track around it. And like there, like you kind of have to go into the grandstands and pay the high prices, whereas you can go to Belgium and pay like just the basic bronze package and roam through the forest and find your own little spots and stuff, which is brilliant. You just get in the main entrance, you can't get into the grandstands, but you don't want to be there because you just go off with your little festival chair, box of candies, and you just end up with a load of Dutch and French people talking shit.
And do you get like a view?
Oh my god, like I went to the same place each year twice. I was sat on a hill. I had a big massive screen across from me, so I could see everything. I was like watching the telly, but the cars kept driving past me as well at like fucking 300 kilometers an hour. It was very cool. Very cool. And like I said, even if you had no interest in the Grand Prix, it was
a you have a good time drinking cans and farting.
Yeah. This has been a long episode actually. We've had loads to talk about. We've gone through an awful lot. It's been really fun. We have a Patreon account for those who don't know. www.patreon.com/Snipcast. Would you like to give us the price of a cup of coffee or a pint once a month? You can, if you can't meet us in real life. I would recommend you do that if you can afford to, of course. If not, just drive on, keep listening, share with your friends, and follow us on the socials. We're Snowcast on Insta, Twitter and Facebook. Thanks a million for coming on. Alan McGuire hosts the Juvenalia podcast. It's fucking brilliant. Even topics, even shows where I've never seen or been interested in them. Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I never watched. It was one of my favourite episodes that you did, which actually I think gives your podcast a whole different it brings it to a different level that I can listen to you and Sarah, or I've only ever been on Sarah once, or you've I can't think of the other person, I'm sorry, it's really bad of me. Sarah and Ellen, you, Sarah and Ellen talking to people about just shows from their childhood, which is brilliant, and it's a brilliant concept, and I love the fact what I think brings it to a different level is Grant. I'm interested in Hercules, the Disney movie, so I'm going to listen to that one tomorrow. Never watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer and thought that was a fucking brilliant podcast listening, which is brilliant. So I would highly recommend, if you don't already listen to Juvenalia, go and check it out. It's brilliant, I really enjoy it. And Ollie, no Fix the Board. Listen, if you come across Ollie in real life, avoid him like the plague.
I'll probably have a good point to Guinness, but I can't really provide much more.
Alan, your message for Snowcast listeners this week?
Keep dancing. Sorry,
yeah. Yeah, it was better than what we usually get. Ollie,
be sound and don't hate on Greta Thunberg.
Clink of the glasses. That was very forced. Sláinte.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.